I'm Peggy Pirro, and this is Food From Here. Brought to you by Swerka and More, empowering seniors and people with disabilities to live safely and independently in their own homes. Learn more at swerka.org. If you've been involved in the not-for-profit sector in Evansville for any length of time, you probably know or have heard about or have worked on a project with Lisa Vaughn. She's been involved with many local not-for-profit organizations, including Junior League, the YWCA, Wright's Home, Wesselman Woods Nature Center, just to name a few. In 2020, Lisa co-founded Feed Evansville. It began as a way to get food into the hands of families when schools shut down in the earliest weeks of the pandemic. Lisa went on to become co-chair of the Mayor's Reopening Food Security Task Force and worked with local government to establish the Evansville Commission on Food Security. We talked about these efforts when we met earlier this fall in a conversation that included what it means to be food insecure, how food pantries and the food bank operate, and how to use and maintain one of those cute little free pantries you may have seen in neighborhoods around town. Later in the episode, I'll have information on an upcoming local food event where you can meet some of our local growers, enjoy some local food, and learn how to improve your own garden. So stay with me to learn more about that. Now, here's my conversation with Lisa Vaughn of Feed Evansville. Lisa, welcome to Food From Here. Let's talk about affordable food and the need for affordable food in our community. Tell me how we're coming up short.
Well, thank you for having me. Wow, that's a big question. How are we coming up short? It's really hard to say how are we coming up short because I find the scope of work always changing in multiple different ways. What worked last year is not always going to work this year, per se. But I think how we're coming up short is, in general, is the culture of how we look at food and the culture of how we see food insecurity. Most people do not see food insecurity as for what it is. They see food insecurity as, oh, someone's starving and we need to give them a meal. Food insecurity has many different forms and it looks different in every household. So I think when people start understanding what true food insecurity is, and they see that they are part of the cycle of food security and how they play a role in it, we can look at things differently. Everyone has to eat. Food is essential to every human being. I've never met anyone, I say this all the time, I've never met anyone who does not have to eat food. And I think when we stop putting labels on everybody, well, this is what food insecurity looks like, but your household doesn't look like that, so you're not food insecure. I think that's where we're really coming up short, is the culture of food security and what it really means. I see food insecurity like this, first and foremost. Food insecurity is not an issue. These are people. So when we take the human side out of food insecurity and put labels on it, we take the most important component out of it. This is a person who is struggling to have nutritional value food in their home on a constant basis. So to kind of break it down, food insecurity really happens if one of these stages is missing from your life. So first you have an access issue. Can I get to the food that is available in my region? So you can have money and be way out in the county and there's not a grocery store for an hour or even, we say, a walking distance of a mile, you're considered food insecure. That's problematic because now your household bills, whether you think it does or not, it does. It goes up because now I have to spend more gas to get to the store. That's money. Then I'm probably going to be selective of how much I buy and not buy when I'm at the store. So I'm probably not buying the fresh produce. I need to buy the frozen things because it needs to last longer because it takes me longer to get to the store. And time is precious, right? You can't get it back. So all those things add to food insecurity. Now, the more likelihood of food insecurity is someone doesn't have a car and they can't get to the store and they have to rely on others to bring them food. Then you have availability. Does your region have availability of food? Do you have enough grocery stores, enough farmers markets, enough food coming in? So if you think about it, like hypothetically, a state like Hawaii is an island, their resources are different. So the food coming in is all imported, and so it's at a higher cost. You know, so they don't have the availability of food the way maybe we do here in Evansville, Indiana, with farmland all around us. Do we have plenty of grocery stores? I would probably say not. That kind of thing. And then you have use and utilization. So can your body break down the food in which you're eating to provide that nutritional value to your body needs? Or do you have health issues and things like I can't eat bread, I'm gluten-free. So that kind of thing. And then also the utilization is, if you hand me a box of wheat, per se, do I know what to do with it? So often we'll hand out food. Do you know what even what to do with what we're handing you, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all that kind of like use and utilization side of it. And then the stability. I always know where my next meal is coming from. And not everybody knows where their next meal is coming from, you know? So I think if you're missing one of those components, you are considered food insecure. And I think everybody wants to put poverty or money attached to food security, and that is not the case. Food insecurity doesn't see economics. They don't see religion. They don't see the color of your skin. It doesn't see gender, and it doesn't see social classification. Food insecurity can happen to anybody. It can happen to the most wealthy person in town. They could have a house fire and they're food insecure. Mm. You know, we had a tornado. Those people are food insecure. We had an explosion of a neighborhood. Those people were food insecure. We have electricity goes out on how many houses for so long? They lost their refrigerator. They lost their freezer. That food is now spoiled. They became instant food insecure. So food insecurity can happen on a short-term and a long-term basis as well. You know, so it's triaging your food insecurity. And I think these classifications are helpful for education purposes and understanding things. But when we take the human out of food insecurity, we really disservice the whole process.
Right. As you were speaking, I was thinking, of course, Old Newburgh is far more than a mile on foot to the grocery store, as is New Harmony, that doesn't have a grocery store anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the notions of food deserts are not necessarily, as you point out, economically based.
Right.
You can have lots of dollars, as we all remember from the pandemic when the store shelves were empty. Mm-hmm. Many people had plenty of money and there were no items to buy.
Right. It wasn't available. So I think that's why we have to look at it a little bit more organic than maybe just checking the boxes per se. So that's probably where we fall short.
Your organization is called Feed Evansville.
Mm-hmm.
Your Facebook profile says it's focused on providing meals to people in times of uncertainty. So that's like all the time, I guess.
Right? Yes.
I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about the group's history, about how you – did you launch it?
I mean, I don't know if I launched it or if it got launched upon me. You know, it's a little bit of a question. It was really simplistic. I am a very proud and honored member of the Junior League of Evansville. I am going on, I think, 20 years membership. I'm actually first year I've become a sustainer. So for about 18, 19 years, I've been active. Anyways, we were looking for our next community project. That's what Junior League does. We empower women to go out and change the world around them. And we do that through aligning a project and women learning about how to create a project, understanding issues and what it means to put on a project. So we were looking for our next project and an issue that we were going to hold on to for Junior League so our members could experience community work, right? And we were really looking at food insecurity. And through my placements in Junior League, I was placed on things like Healthy Community Partners Work Task and doing different things. And we said, you know, let's go out and do lunches to get to know the neighborhood and find, because we know we want to do food insecurity work as our issue. So to find out what the project needs to be. And we realized giving out those lunches in 2019 that was the project. Well, then 2020 happened. And because I was a leader at the time in Junior League and was doing and had some different placements on the outside of the walls of Junior League through Healthy Community Partners and whatnot, Alex Burton, who's a dear friend of mine, calls me and said, hey, the schools are going to shut down because of COVID. is Junior League going to hand out their lunches? And I said, yeah, in fact, we're going to increase. We normally do like 50 to 100. We're probably going to do like a bunch and hit multiple neighborhoods where we normally only do one neighborhood at a time because we're seeing, we understand that. And I said, but it's not just that simple, Alex. It's not just handing the lunches out to the kids. And then I expanded some more. And by the time him and I got off the phone, we had already set up a call that on Friday he was going to bring his friends to the table. I was bringing my friends to the table. We, at the time, Ben Shoulders, who was a county commissioner, came to the table. You know, we had different leaders coming, and we formulated Feed Evansville in one phone call. Mm-hmm. I don't think him and I knew that's what we did, mm-hmm. but that's what we did. And I happened, how the name came about, I just happened to make a spreadsheet and send it out to all these people about action items we were all going to do, because we saw that this COVID isn't just, oh, shutting down. There's going to be multiple ripple effects. And sometimes it's like, I don't know if everybody thought about that when they're like, okay, well, we're just, you know, a couple days, like whatever. And I'm like, even those couple weeks are probably going to have some ripple effects that we need to address right away. And I just titled it Feed Evansville. Like out of a whim.
And there it was.
And everybody's just started calling it that. And within 2 weeks, I called my brother-in-law, who's a graphic artist in Napa, really actually a really fantastic painting artist, but does graphic work. And I said, hey, can you give me a logo? And he made me a logo. And that, I mean, I remember I was in the back of the car with Alex, and I just called him and said, make me a logo, and I had one the next day. He's like, sure, sis, nice. Not a problem.
It's good to know people.
Yeah, and it just kind of formulated. So it really was an organic thing. That's the most thing I'm proud about. It was truly a grassroots effort, and no one told us to do it. No one asked us to do it. We just did it. Did we know what we were doing? No. We just went out and did it. And you'll hear me talk often, and I say often, and I'm sure people who know me are tired of me hearing it. You know, part of success in life is just showing up. Just showing up and acknowledging that something needs to be done. And if you don't do it right again the next day. If you come to everything that there's failures in life, then you will fail. My attitude about life is you win or you learn. And there's nothing else about it. Like, you know, let's just be clear, I have failed many times. I probably have failed 3 times today. Got my daughter late to school. You know, I mean, so there's, but you kind of have to learn from everything, and you have to do better the next day. So that's what I'm most proud of. Like, no one told us. We just said there's an issue and we're going to take care of it. And we were proactive about the issue. So in the first couple of days, we worked with Junior League and they were doing lunches. I worked personally with the school system and Junior League. And Junior League was so vital. They helped volunteer at the cafeteria so the cafeteria women could be in the back and feel safe and make the lunches. And Junior League, if we felt like we didn't need to be safe, I don't know what I say that jokingly. We were very safe. We were 6 feet, mask, gloves, the whole bit. And we handed out the lunches to the kids. And I helped organize that. And asked Junior League if they could put it out to their volunteers. And I got other people to volunteer, not just Junior League. But I do want to give Junior League props for being flexible during that time and saying, what do we need to do to help? And I was, and because of my connections outside of Junior League, I got a lot of other people involved too. Feed Evansville is separate from Junior League. They're mm-hmm. not the same organization, but Junior League is definitely a community partner of Feed Evansville. And we value them and the work that they're doing in the community.
I'm going to take you back to that conversation that you had with Alex. Mm-hmm. That first conversation when you said, well, you're going to need more.
Yeah.
What did you mean? And what were the assumptions, and where were you filling in?
So where I fill in, I've experienced food insecurity as a child. I didn't have the best upbringing. I make no qualms about that. But I mean, everybody loved a snow day when I was growing up. I hated a snow day because it meant I had to stay in my house, which was somewhat dysfunctional. It also meant that I didn't maybe know. There was always food in my house. My mom worked so hard. That woman woke up at 5 a.m. every morning and bloodied her knuckles, per se, to make sure things were on table. But when you have 9 kids.
That's a big family.
It's a big family. And there's a lot of stress on that. And, you know, there's just certain things we didn't have. And I didn't want to fight, you know, for the food that day with my brothers mm-hmm. or something. And then it also that put stress on finances. Mm. I mean, I always knew if the car broke down or the hot water tank went out, we had eggs in multiple different forms throughout the week. Breakfast for this, breakfast because it was cheaper. So, you know, snow days and stuff are hard on people like that. And you just look at it differently. And so when they're saying they're shutting down the kids, the only thing I could think of, like, oh, there's all these children. I mean, over 50% of our kids in the Evansville school system are on free and reduced lunch. So that's the only thing I was thinking about. I was like, that means less breakfast, less lunch. What are they going to do? And then they're not getting their back, their little sacks on the weekends from the food bank to go home with. So I was trying to say that to Alex. I'm like, this isn't just generally going out and handing lunch. There's a bigger problem here. And now we have pantries going to shut down, Alex. And he's like, how do you know that? I'm like, because the average pantry worker is over 65. And during COVID, that was a big deal. If you were over a certain age, you should stay inside. You should shelter in place. And so it was going to have a ripple effect. And then look at the grocery stores. They're telling us we can only go one at a time. What if I'm a single mom? What do I do with the kids? Do I leave them in the car? Do I leave them at home by themselves to their own devices? Like, what do I do? And he's like, oh. I'm like, this is bigger than what people are thinking. And maybe I'm naive, you know. And I remember sitting with Jeremy Evans and the director of the Dream Center and a good friend of mine. And I'm going, a week or two. America doesn't like to wear masks. This isn't like the bird flu over in China. We'll be fine. And I mean, that's how, if I was thinking that way, and I was also thinking of the ripple effects, think everybody else was thinking that too. So him and I just had a very candid conversation. And he's like, okay, we need to do more. We need to look at things. And I agreed. And now here we are, 2024, and we're still doing it. I did not foresee this. I didn't plan it. I thought maybe a week or two. I really did. So we started handing out lunches, and then we opened a pop-up grocery store so people that need us to go grocery shopping for them to deliver. But then I worked with CRS, and I started getting the food myself and making – this is the menu this week on the grocery list.
You worked with who?
CRS. It's a food distributing company in Owensboro. The Clark brothers, they're amazing human beings. And I would make – okay – every grocery bag is going to have this in it. And then I was doing like 200 grocery bags a week. And then we were doing pantry boxes. And then the mayor asked Alex and I to be co-chairs of the reopening task force. Mayor Winnick was fabulous during COVID. What do you need? Help me with it. He calls me and goes, are you doing all this out of your minivan? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay, we can do better. And he helped me get space. Him and Steve Schaefer, the deputy mayor at the time, really solid people. We had really good leaders. And you know, and then at the height of COVID, I worked with Purdue Extension and Healthy Community Partners and Lacey Wilson, a good friend of mine that was also on the, the reopening task force with me, was like, helped me find the farm to family boxes. And at the height of COVID, we were handing out 7,000 family farm boxes a week.
Yeah. That's impressive.
And I thought I was going to be, you know, we were going to be done in 2 weeks and kids were going to go back to school and we're going to be fine. But I will say a gift that I have is I I say this cautiously because people that know me be like, no, you're not. I am flexible. Like, I will pivot. So flexibility is not a good word. I'll pivot when I'm staked in the ground firm, but I'll pivot around if I need to.
Can you talk a little bit about the Commission on Food Security?
Yeah.
You brought that up before we started recording. Mm-hmm. And I had not heard of it, and I don't know its function. I wonder if you could fill us in.
Yeah. Best of my ability. So during the reopening task force, we had a task force, and we all decided that we needed a commission on food security. Some communities call them food councils.
Sure.
And things like that. But working with the deputy mayor, Steve, because he was on the opening task force, he felt it was important that it was an ordinance. Because if it's an ordinance, then we have to have one. If it's a council and we all get together, if any of us leave or it's volunteer driven or whatever, then it could kind of dissipate, right?
Okay.
And we've seen things like that happen.
Sure.
And that's just human nature. And he's like, if it's an ordinance, then we have to have it. So it's the Mayor's Commission on Food Security.
Okay.
And the mayor, it's an ordinance that the city council voted in and it has very key players that need to be on this council, representation. So we have to have a rep from the food bank. We have to have a rep from a Feed America pantry. We have to have someone who helps us with financial. We have to have someone from restaurants. We have to have someone from the food distributing industry. We have to have someone who represents people experiencing homelessness, someone who represents the elderly, someone who represents school, someone who represents hospitals. So it's really going, bringing all the players to the table.
It sounds like a big commission.
It is. Mm-hmm. And our goal is that we see the problem from multiple sides, and we also see what everybody's work that's happening. And then we kind of lay out a strategic direction of maybe what's needed. Now, the Food Commission doesn't have, like, authority or anything. We can't tell pantries to do something, but we host a pantry summit that provides education so they can have best practices. We listen to what their needs are, and then we go back to the commission and talk about it. And Feed Evansville is the administrative organization of the commission currently. So we don't function like maybe what other people would see a food council needs to be, because we didn't set it up that way. We set it up for what we thought was going to work best of A, what we already have, what is going to work well in Evansville, and what will give us the stability. And I am really blessed. Mayor Terry believes in it. She stands behind it. Our deputy mayor, our new deputy mayor, Lindsay, comes to the meetings. So, you know, there was such a fantastic transition from administration to administration, and we're in good hands. I think I, even as the administrator, can tell you that the Food Commission could do more. We could get together and kind of work on this a little bit more. But what we've been doing is we've been doing really valuable work. We get together, we see some issues. So, for instance, there's a committee that's formulated to make recommendations to Feed Evansville for what the conditions of the community kitchen should be. And we put on a food summit so all the pantries can get together, and we provided education to them. And we made a pantry assessment so pantries can look at their pantry practices and say, am I doing good D&IB work with pantries? Am I having really good practices taking care of this neighborhood pantry and things like that? And then we did a candidates forum last fall. So the candidates that were running for election could really answer questions about food insecurity and what their roles could play into that. So the commission's doing some really good work. There's always room to grow. There's always room for us to maybe come together and really set out some good strategic thoughts and plans. But we're really there to go, oh, that's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And now we see it from all sides. What could solve that? And then we kind of put it out there, guys, this is what could solve the problem. Who wants to pick up the work? Like that kind of thing. So
So that pantry summit, talk a little bit more about that.
We have around 86 pantries in the area, and the goal was that they would all attend. And I will keep fighting for that goal. It has never happened yet. We average about 25 to 30. There's always something, well, we didn't get the invite, this didn't happen, you know, and I'm always looking for that magic, tell me how to get the information out. But we average about 25 to 30 that attend. And every year has been set up slightly different based on the conversations at the Food Commission, projects that are happening, things that the pantries have told us that they need. So the very first one was virtual in 2020. And we, you know, have had one every year since. And like the year before, they were talking about pantries were really expressing the concern of, like, we mainly use the food bank. The food bank is just that. It's a food bank. It has all the food in it, and the pantries can go and they can purchase it very minimal. I mean, we're talking like pennies on the can that the food bank acquires in multiple different ways. But there's sometimes because the food bank still has to acquire that of food in some way, they might not have enough peanut butter, or they might, they always have peanut butter, but just hypothetically, right? And they're like, then they're hunting peanut butter down. Like they're going to Meijer's and trying to like clean out the rack and trying to work with Meijer's of like, can you order me some? And some grocery stores will make some small orders for these pantries. And they were like, I said, well, we talked and we did some research, a bulk buying program. And now this year we've launched the bulk buying program. So what's coming out of these pantry summits is not only education to the pantries, but what their needs are.
Right.
And then the commission comes back and says, okay, let's research of how we solve that. And then Feed Evansville decided to pick up the bulk buying. We didn't have to, but we have the means, and the board agreed to that. So we have a bulk buying program where we worked with Winkler's up in the Jasper area, who is a grocery store distributor. So CRS is a restaurant distributor.
Got
and
it.
They're so there's different types of food distributors, too. All things I never thought I would ever know and learn. I mean, I was a music major in college, so the fact that I know all of this is like, what happened? So, we now twice a month will deliver to pantries who purchase, and we really try to get the best because we're buying in bulk right from the distributor, so we can get a better price than you can maybe at the store or comparable to the store, and the pantries don't have to work so hard. So it's just another resource for them. They're always going to use the food bank first and foremost. They're always going to rely on donations from people, but we now have another option for them. And I've had some pantries call me, I can't find this. And okay, you do the pantry really well, and most pantries are run by volunteers. Let's give them a little extra set of hands. So I then can get on the horn and start finding that load of grape jelly for you or whatever it might be, right? And so it's just another tool. And people can use it, they cannot use it, but it's mainly for organizations. It's not set up for individual. Now Urban Seeds does the Nourish program, which is buying that's set up for individual households. This is set up for food insecurity work of nonprofits or organizations.
I had a very rudimentary understanding of the food bank and the food pantries and how things are interrelated and how it all works. And I guess I assumed at some point that things were simply provided for free. Now, I know it's very, very inexpensively to the pantries, but there is money exchange there because the food bank has an operating budget that they have to maintain. And even though the pantries are usually run by volunteers, they have to be in a place that also has some requirements or some needs, some financial needs, even if it's just keeping the lights on and keeping the place clean. So I guess I didn't really understand how the network was put together of these pantries and the food bank and the ancillary organizations that hold it all together, really. It's complex.
It is. Life's hard. That's my motto. Life is hard. It's far more complex than I think people think it is.
Okay.
I mean, I think I always thought it was very simple. You know, I give food to the food bank and people get fed. It's a little bit more complex than that, but it is also that simplistic. At the end of the day, I don't want to deter people. It is that simple. Make a donation to the food bank. Glenn Roberts will love you to the end of the time. Make a donation to the food bank, help the food bank out, provide them food. But the food bank has to work really hard, just like anyone else, to resource, right? So they have, if it's hard to get eggs, it's going to be hard for the food bank to get eggs too. That's why the commission felt like it was important to have things like bulk buying and all that. So that way we were kind of all working together and whatnot. The food bank has multiple different programs, and there's many different ways that organizations can get food through the food bank. Some of it is purchasing. There's TFAT programs. There's government programs. So it depends on what your pantry qualifies for and what you apply or eligible for. You know, I'm working with the pantry or director at the food bank right now, so Feed Evansville can go to a farm and pick things up and then hand them out to individual families in need. I qualify for that, but I might not qualify for other programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's complex. But really, the simple answer is the food bank is the food bank. And so there's an exchange that happens. Just like if you go to the bank and you make a deposit in, you make a deposit out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So pantries can go to the food bank and purchase food for very cheap, but there's also donation. The food bank also does a lot of food waste work in the sense of they'll work with the big box stores and get, produce before it's like dead, and they bring it, and then the pantries can get some of those things items for free as well, and then they can pass it out. So, and every situation is slightly different depending on the pantry.
There's always a question when you want to make a donation, if it's better to donate, and I'm not just talking about the food bank in particular, but any place you want to make a donation, is it better to donate money or to donate the items? Kind of depends.
I mean, it really depends, you know? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I can take your money and stretch it far more than you can if you go buy items, right? So I think you just need to listen to what the organization's asking for and find an organization you love. Find an organization that you feel close tied with, that you're passionate about. I always tell everybody, listen, I feel very passionate about a lot of organizations in town, but what I'm going to give to each of them is going to be different. Like, I was very passionate about the Boys and Girls Club. I served on their board. You know, I was very passionate about the YWCA. I served on their board. There's other organizations in town that I'm equally passionate about, but I will better serve them by being a donor, not serving on their board. So I think, like, you also have to remember, this is what I do well, and this is what I can give. So you might be like, I really am about food insecurity. It's okay if you're just the person who drops off the cans to the Free Little Pantries or to the local pantry or your church's pantry, whatever you feel called to do. And then there's other places where you're like, you know, but the food bank could probably stretch my money a little bit differently, and then I can help all the pantries. And that's more of my mindset than give money to the food bank. So I think it's about an individual understanding how they're connected to the issue, whatever that issue might be. You know, like when I go and talk to sponsors and I teach classes with different organizations of how to make the ask with donors and things like that, I'm not looking for a check. I'm looking for a relationship. And you sell cars really well. I don't need to know how to sell cars. I don't need anything about that. And you keep selling cars. But you want to have a connection with your community. I have a connection with the community. That's what I do really well. So let's work together. And this is the resource that you might have. It might not be a check. It might be that we have an event at your dealership. It might be that you come and do a talk or something at a conference I'm putting on. So it's about relationship building. And when we can look again at something with the human side of it, we seem to prosper more.
You mentioned the little pantries.
Yeah.
In passing. I wonder if we could talk about those just a little
bit. They're so cute. They it's in the name. Cute.
Yeah.
Free Little Pantry.
Can anybody put one up?
Yeah. So yes and no. You individually can build a pantry and put it up yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. If you would like a Feed Evansville Free Little Pantry that is already pre-built, ready to go, and get stocked once a month, then there's certain criteria we have to meet. For instance, it is not going to work if Jack has a pantry and four houses down, then Jill gets a pantry. That defeats the purpose of the pantry. In the sense of the goal with Feed Evansville and the board's goal is that we have 40 pantries up in all the food deserts. Okay. We're probably going to expand that because now we have more than 40 that are being built for us. But anyone can build one and put one up. So that's what's lovely about it. It's not about Feed Evansville. It's about the community. And it's about inspiring someone to do something. But the Free Little Pantries, what I love about them is that they're open 24/7. I approach the pantry to put food into it the same way someone would approach the pantry to take food out. It's a little bit dignity with that. And it's a physical reminder to everyone in our community when they pass by that, oh, people might need to come to a box to get a can of something. Now, they are not here to, and this is going to happen, they are not here to do your grocery shopping. They're here to get an item or two. Our guidelines on the pantry say, please take no more than 2 to 3 items, right? And somebody will call me and go, I saw someone clean the whole thing out. And I went, well, they'll have to, that's their conscience. That's their integrity. That's what they have to deal with. I'm not the food police. There is no ticket that I can give out if you violated the things. I have a set of rules around them, and they're just humane rules. They're guidelines for people to follow. So I think we just kind of flow with it. And I'll be honest with you, I walk around, a lot of our pantries are empty all the time because Feed Evansville will fill them up once a month. They're really meant for everybody in our community to walk over and go, here. And put some items in and everybody to walk up the community. I mean, here's the thing. It's okay, too. Like, if you were making dinner and you live down the street from the pantry and you're like, I think I don't have that can of corn. Run down to the pantry. See if there's a can of corn in it. Grab it. You're eating. So I just, they're meant more for avocation purposes and to help somebody maybe in an immediate need and kind of take stress off in that moment. They're not meant, they're not going to replace the pantries in town. They're not going to replace long-term anything. So,
but it is a reminder that, as you said, somebody in this neighborhood is going to be needing something, and let's make sure that it's there for them.
Yeah, it's a way for neighbors to help neighbors. You know what I mean? And it's just a way all of us can participate in that. It's a simple thing. What I also love about it is that so many organizations have gotten behind them. So Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, the Rotaract. We had a local business recently that was their community day. They built 10 of them. The high schools are building them in their shop classes. The Evans School System's gotten behind them. And so, yeah, because Lisa's not a carpenter. I use the back of my heel to hang a picture. So, and this isn't just Evansville. This is happening all over the country. These free little pantries, just like the free little libraries are popping up everywhere, so is the pantries. And what's really great is we can either paint them for you or we can give it to you and then you can paint it or you can have, we had somebody put one up in their yard and they had the community kids paint it. You know, so I love it when it's not cookie cuttered and it can just be what it needs to be for that neighborhood, or it can be like, we're going to put one up in at Glenwood at the elementary school, and the principal's like, I'm going to have the art department paint it. I'm like, yes! You know, like, different people getting involved. I mean, that's how we expand everybody's mind, and that's how we expand everybody's view take on something, is by not going, well, only these people can do it, and it can only be done this way. Ivy Tech has one up, so their students can utilize it. I mean, I hope these pantries are self-stable. So I hope people hear this and they go, okay, I'm going to look for all the pantries on our Feed Evansville website. We'll even post pantries that don't belong to us, but we'll put like a little star that's a private entity, just because we're a nonprofit, we have to do those things. But I hope people start putting food in them on their own. You know what I mean? To make them more stable, because I am getting calls. They're empty more than they're full, you know, and that's, if that doesn't tell us anything. And yes, there's probably individuals going by some of them and cleaning them out. But think about what that person needs, that they felt they had to go up to a box and clean out the little box canned good pantry. That's mainly probably green beans and corn. There's probably not a huge variety of food in there, right?
Maybe a box of mac
and
cheese.
I always tell everybody, when people are like, I don't think that person in the car line that took that box of food, Lisa, really needs it because they're driving this car. I said, I'm sorry, if you're going to stand in one of my lines, it probably takes a good hour before you get through, if not longer, whenever I do a community food share. It's just the nature of the beast of Feed Evansville. And if you're going to stand in line that long to maybe get a $20 box of food, I don't care if you really financially needed it or not, you mentally needed it. And that's why, again, 95% of people in line genuinely have food insecurity issues, and probably 5% don't, but then they probably mentally need the food. And I, again, look at it, the human side of it.
We talked about Junior League. They've been operating the neighborhood food market truck, bus, or I guess it's a truck, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a minute to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm very proud of Junior League for doing that. And the people, the leaders who are running it now, are doing an amazing job. So it's the neighborhood food market. And we've had some key players. It took a while to get that market up and running and doing it. But Junior League's doing a bang-out job with it. And they should be really proud of themselves.
Is it year-round?
It's year-round. Okay. It's every Saturday. The only thing that's stopping it from going out more is funding. It's probably about $1,000 every time that truck rolls out. And I think people don't. They're like, it's just a truck with food on it. I'm like, no, it's a little bit more than that. So what they're doing is it's a grocery store on wheels, basically. Okay. It's pretty cool. And they've had some community partners. I think they're expanding to try to get more community partners. And they're selling groceries at a discounted rate. So anywhere from 25% off to 50% off, you're buying your groceries. And eventually they want to be able to take SNAP. So I think Junior League is working through that. That's a very rigorous process with the state to be SNAP certified and whatnot. So they're working on that. And then they like to do small education programs once in a while with kids. That was the model. The model was, we'll hand out free lunches to anyone that comes up to the truck that needs one. We'll sell groceries at a reduced rate. And in year three or four, we'll do some public, you know, like fun things with the kids in the park or something while we're selling the groceries and handing out the lunches, right? So then the totality of food insecurity is there. You know, Junior League is a volunteer organization. It's women being empowered to be civic leaders. So Junior League is actually a development program, and they develop women to be civic leaders. So then, like, I was a Junior League member, and now I can run a nonprofit. We have, like, Natalie Rasher, who was a former president, was running for mayor. So Junior League sets you up to run your community in multiple different ways. And that's the testament. I mean, Carol McClintock's a Junior League member, Erica Taylor, Carice Johnson, who's running for county council. Like, so this is what Junior League does. Hope Fujner, you know, we're all Junior League members. But it's still a nonprofit, and it still has to raise money. So I think, you know, I would love the future of that truck, you know, rest on financing. You know, and I would love for it to go out as Feed Evansville and a member of the Food Commission, that truck going out more than once a week would be vital to our community. But we have to find the funds for it.
All right.
Yeah. So everybody that's listening in, like, let's get some funds going for Junior League.
I was going to ask you, how can people get involved both with Feed Evansville and with some of these other organizations we've talked about? And what kind of commitment of time or resources is required to get involved? Because I know that can be inhibiting for some people.
I mean, honestly, Feed Evansville needs people in the sense of, you tell me what you want to do, and I will make that happen. If you want to just make calls for me and call all the pantries to personally invite them to the food summit once a year, great. Do you want to write my thank you notes for me? So I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid to do Feed Evansville. So, like, I can use all the help I can get, right? And I have board members who are fantastic and work and everything. So everyone has gifts and talents. If you want to be involved, call me. There's a spot for you. And it can be as often or as little as you want it to be. Same with most of these organizations aren't going to turn you away, you know? So it's about seeing what speaks to you and finding that niche.
Okay. How can people get in contact with you?
So they can either reach out to me through our Feed Evansville website, so feedevansville.com. They can go on Facebook, Feed Evansville. They can email us at, is it feedevv@gmail.com?
Okay.
They want to be in organizations like Junior League. Junior League has a website. Check them out on the website. Tri-State Food Bank, Urban Seeds. We all have websites. We all have Facebook pages. So just reach out and someone will get in contact with you.
Lisa Vaughn, thanks for taking the time to come and talk to us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
It's
I appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Food From Here is brought to you by Swerka and More, empowering seniors and people with disabilities to live safely and independently in their own homes. You can learn more at swerka.org. If you're a regular listener to Food From Here, there's a pretty good chance you have an interest in local food, maybe urban agriculture, gardening, starting a market garden of your own, or you just like hearing from local growers and food producers in our community. If that's you, I encourage you to attend the Farm Vitality Workshop next month in Evansville. You'll meet some of the guests we've had here on Food From Here, including folks from Evansville Countryside Orchard, Local Source, Seton Harvest, and Beautiful Edibles. And you'll hear from keynote speaker Jesse Frost, creator and original host of the No-Till Market Garden podcast and author of the Living Soil Handbook. This is a really good opportunity for anyone interested in growing food to learn about no-till gardening and to network with our local growing community. It happens Saturday, November 16th from 8 a.m. until 3:30 at City View on Fulton Avenue. Registration is $10 and includes catering by Pangea featuring foods from area growers. You'll find details in the show notes. I hope to see you there.
Next time on Food From Here, I sit down with Roger and Mary Winstead of Beautiful Edibles to talk about what's been going on at their farm and how their business focus has shifted since we first talked on Food From Here at the beginning of our very first season. Roger and Mary have been central figures in helping to establish our local food network and mentoring new farmers in our area. I hope you'll join me in 2 weeks for that conversation. Food From Here is produced by Tri-State Public Media in Evansville, Indiana, home of WNIN-FM and WNIN-PBS. Thanks to Swerka and Moore for their sponsorship and to listeners like you who support public media. I'm Peggy Pirro. See you next time.